We would like to invite all of the kids who are 4 years old through fourth grade to make their way on down to Children's Church at this time. Miss Anna Hahn will be leading the kids this morning. Thank you for that, Anna. So, my older sister, until very recently, worked for the school board of the city of Jackson, Wyoming. And my sister just took an early retirement. And for the last couple of years prior to her early retirement, she was given an extremely difficult challenge. My sister is a computer programmer, and she was in charge of the databases and a lot of the computer systems for the city of Jackson, Wyoming. By the way, that will tell you where the brains of the family went, in case you've ever wondered about that little mystery. So my sister was given this incredible challenge. The school board decided that they wanted to change over the computer systems for the entire region, and she was given the responsibility of doing this. This means all the computers that were responsible for the databases and the collection of information and charting the progress of students and interfacing with parents and parents interfacing with teachers, all of this stuff they were redoing almost from the ground and starting a new program. So my sister was responsible for getting this program up and running, for teaching other people to run it, and then for being ready to leave at the time of her retirement here in the last couple of months. It was an extraordinary challenge because what she was doing was teaching people to run a new program. And I love this metaphor, run the new program, for the Christian life. In many, many ways, I think it really, really works. I believe that it is as though we have been running an old, sick program through our lives. It's a program that has us doing the very things that we don't want to do, and it has us not able to do many of the things that we want to do. It's a program that we can look around us any day and see the terrible destructiveness of an old program. But there's a new program that we can run, a program that is centered in the grace and the mercy and the love of God. But as my sister's story will illustrate, moving from the old program to the new is going to be challenging. And so this morning is the seventh and final week that I'm going to be speaking about this theme, Run the New Program. I believe that to run the new program, we must ask a very simple question. And the very simple question that people running a new program need to ask is this: what is it that God is up to right now? What is it that God is doing right now? If you were to ask the brothers of Joseph that question, and in fact this whole family that question, my hunch is that they would have been scratching their heads without an answer in the moments leading up to the text of Scripture this morning. This is a story of a very, very, very dysfunctional and tragic family, and it is a family that has experienced all of the heartbreak that comes with this sort of thing. And you can imagine any of the members of this story looking up to heaven, maybe even with clenched fists, and saying, "What in the world are you up to?" Think about Joseph for a moment. Here's Joseph, who was sold into slavery by his brothers in a moment of terrible envious and vindictiveness, sold by his brothers, taken into slavery. And in spite of the fact that he now is second in charge over all of Egypt, he has had, we don't know exactly, at least 15 years to stew on what his brothers have done to him. Imagine that. 15 years to think about the day that they beat him up, threw him into a pit, dragged him out of the pit, made it look as though he had been killed by wild animals to take that story to their father, and then they had sold him off into slavery. For 15 years, he's had an opportunity to stew about what his brothers had done to him. And now, they stand in front of him, not recognizing who he is, and he has the power of judgment. Whew. Do you feel the tension in this story? It is as thick as a knife. And then there's Benjamin. There's Benjamin, who has been accused of stealing Joseph's cup and now is threatened with the possibility of going to jail for the rest of his life. Benjamin, by the way, is a Hebrew name which means destined to be a youth pastor, I'm pretty sure. I have that on strong authority. Here is Benjamin, who has not done anything wrong, in whose saddlebags had been found this cup that belongs to Joseph. And now he's threatened with spending the rest of his life in an Egyptian prison. If he were to draw his breath in this moment to pray, you could only imagine that he would say something like, "What in the world, God, are you doing?" And then there's the brothers. Then there's these 10 older brothers. These brothers who have now had over a decade and a half to ponder what they did in the stupidest moment of their lives. In a moment of fitful rage, they had sold their brother, feigned his death, and then they had lived since that time with the suffering of their father. They had watched him grow older day by day by day as their father grieved over the loss of his son Joseph, and they were to blame. And now, here they stand in Egypt before this man they do not know, and it feels and seems and looks in every way as though finally these brothers are going to get what they deserve. And you could understand if in this moment they were to lift their voices and their heads and say, "God, what are you doing?" And then there's just the circumstances themselves. There have been 7 years of abundance in Egypt, but now they have finished 2 years of famine. 2 years. The world is struggling and longing and looking for hope, and here stands this dysfunctional family, and if any one of them were to lift their voices in prayer, we would understand if their prayer said, "God, what in the world is it that you are doing right now?" Over these last 7 Sundays, I've been speaking about an old program and offering the suggestion, I hope the challenge, that we really, really need to run a new program. This isn't just playground stuff. This is really, really serious stuff. Our world needs people who are running a different program because, folks, the old program just isn't getting it done. Over the last 7 weeks, we've seen how programs of fear have been destructive in the characters of the Old Testament. We have seen how hatefulness has emerged from people who are running an old program. We've witnessed Esau selling his birthright. We've seen that Christian people sell our birthrights too. Our birthright, which is we are people created in the image of God, and yet we sell that birthright all of the time. We've witnessed Jacob who wanted, it seems as though Jacob wanted always to live anywhere except here, and any time except now. That was his way of running the old program. And we've seen these brothers now who in horrific envy and hatefulness have brought deep, 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 deep suffering into their own family and into their own lives. And this morning I want to talk about what all of these different expressions of the old program have in common. I believe that it is this. All of these different expressions of the old program have this in common, that they are looking for a shortcut. It is the program of the quick fix. If you think about it, all of these things that we've looked at over these various weeks, this fearfulness, this anger, this hatefulness, this vindictiveness, in every case, these old programs are an effort to get a quick fix for what is hurting people. If you think about it today, the ways that we run the old program today, almost always they're run because we're looking for a quick fix for whatever it is that ails us. Think about violence for a moment. I don't think there are really very many people that take violence in hand because they want to make the world a worse place. I think most people take violence in hand because they're wanting to get something good accomplished, but they're trying to do it in the briefest of all imaginable ways. And so violence is one of the ways that we continue running this old program. The old program is a program that works by efficiency. Let me ask you to sit with that word for just a moment. Efficiency is in itself not a bad thing. Efficiency is what we do in order to get things done in a quick and helpful way. I don't know about you, I am very grateful for efficiency when it comes time for the fire department to respond to a fire. They have systems in place that are extraordinarily efficient, and I am extremely grateful that they do. I am glad for first responders who have been trained very, very well in efficiency. Efficiency is what my computer does, and I'm grateful for the efficiency of my computer. I can turn it on, and it collates documents, and it organizes them, and it files them, and it saves them, and then all I have to do to get this efficient thing to work well for me is to ask my son to take care of things when it starts working wrongly. My computer is profoundly efficient, and I'm grateful for that. The problem is that we bring efficiency to places where what we need first is love. Think about this for a moment. Think about the challenges that we face on a regular basis. Think about, for example, our relational challenges. We have complicated relational challenges. By the way, just consider how extraordinarily complicated some of them are. Some of our family challenges are families that have been are problems that have been passed down from generations. We've got great-grandparents and grandparents and parents and passed down to this generation, challenges that have just spilled over from one generation to another to another. If you've ever stood back and just listened to the stories of your own family, you know this is true. And so we have these challenges in our relationships that come down generation after generation after generation after generation, but then we want a quick fix. I know of people who've gone in to see a counselor once or twice and then been angry that a trip or two to the counselor hadn't fixed all of their relational problems. People that will read an article about how to think more positively and then come away frustrated that that one article in which they read in 30 minutes hasn't done anything to fix their relationships. You see, what we need sometimes is not efficiency. What we need is patience and love. The old program runs by efficiency. Think with me for a moment about our emotional challenges. This troubles me very deeply. I believe we're living in a day and age, we who are Americans are living in a day and age when we want quick fixes for our emotional challenges. We think that in the same way that you go into the doctor when you're suffering from a flu and you get a prescription, some antibiotics that will help you to get feeling better in a day or two, we think that the same thing ought to be true of our emotional challenges. We think that loneliness, discouragement, depression ought to be fixed, and it ought to be fixed in a hurry. You see, we're addicted to the quick fix in all of these things that we do. I've been learning just very recently about the tremendous challenge that we have here in the United States with medications, with pain-killing medications. A person in the medical community told me recently that it is simply an epidemic, that everywhere they are seeing people who are addicted to pain-killing medications. They may have gotten started to take care of a problem with their hip or with their back, or in some cases, they may have gotten it illegally because it provides such a quick fix to their emotional challenges, but we all know the long-term damage that comes from this sort of thing. Think about our challenges with the quick fix and our emotional lives. And now I want to ask you to ponder with me a little bit longer the quick fix and our spirituality. In the same way that we want quick fixes for our relational lives and our emotional lives, we today want a quick fix for our spirituality. I love the well-known writer who wrote in her journal, "Lord, I want you to make me a mystic," which was her way of saying a person with a deep and profound relationship with God. She wrote, "Lord, I want to be a mystic, and I want it right now." Several years ago, there was a movie starring Steve Martin called Leap of Faith. It was a very interesting story. Steve Martin played this, trickster who pretended to be a traveling evangelist. He and his team would go into communities and they would gather together groups of people. They would have they would have sort of an overnight evangelist gathering. And so they would draw people in from all over the community however they could. But he was a cheat. He was a lie, Steve Martin's character was. What he would do is when people were coming into the gathering, they would write down their prayer requests. They didn't know that there was a hidden camera that was observing them writing down their prayer requests. And somebody would make note. The woman in the yellow dress is suffering from lower back pain. And then they'd note where she was being seated. She's on the fifth row from the back. So as Steve Martin was preaching along, there was a radio transmitter in his ear, and somebody at the back would say, "There's a lady in a yellow dress with lower back pain. She's five rows from the back." And Steve Martin would say, "The Lord has just given me a word." Well, it was very funny, and it was extremely sick. And in telling this story, in no ways whatsoever, do I want to cast aspersions on traveling evangelists, because 99.9% of them are fabulous and in it for all the right reasons. What struck me, though, about the story was, why would that be so attractive to such a large number of people? Why are some people so attracted to a message that says, you can get healing right now, and you can be fixed of your problems right now, and your marriage can be all better right now? I believe the answer is that we are living in a day of the quick fix. We want efficiency, and we want it right now, and we want all of the blessings that God has for us right now. So, what is it that God is doing? In this moment, right now, what is God up to? Try to imagine the anxious space in which Joseph and his brothers are gathered right now. Picture Joseph standing before his brothers with the power of judgment in his hand. Picture them standing there quivering in fear, wondering what is going to become of them in the next few minutes. Now, watch Joseph as he leaves the room because he can't control himself. The emotion of the moment has finally grasped him. He sends his attendants out of the way and goes on his own, and he weeps in the realization of the events that are taking place before him. And then he walks back into the place where his brothers are, and he says, I'm Joseph. I'm your brother. And the brothers don't know what to do with this news just yet. You wouldn't either after at least 15 years. I am Joseph, he says to them. I am your brother. Don't be afraid, because it is not you who sent me into Egypt. It is God. And friends, this is the first time in at least 15 years, it is the first time that the light bulbs have finally come on for Joseph, and he has finally realized why he is here. Don't worry, he says to his brothers. Don't worry. You see, the Lord sent me down here so that I could be a source of healing for many, many people. And I am here to provide the food that you need so that you can be the remnant that God has called you to be. Don't worry any longer. This story has a wonderful conclusion. The story ends with these brothers all hugging one another. First, there's Joseph squeezing the neck of Benjamin, his youngest brother, and they're weeping on each other's necks. And then all the others are hugging and weeping all over each other. And then the story ends with, I love how understated this is. The story ends with saying, and they all talked together. You think? After at least 15 years longer, no doubt, they talked together. And oh my gosh, could you imagine the storytelling that began to take place as they talked about the things that had taken place over all these years? And then finally Joseph says, I want you to go back. I want you to get my father. Tell him, no, don't worry. Tell him that I'm here. Tell him that I'm father to this whole nation. I oversee everything except Pharaoh himself. Bring him back. We're going to supply everything that you want and need. It is a story of extraordinary reconciliation that, here's the key, unfolds over decades of time. And it is this moment right now, when the lights finally turn on for Joseph and he recognizes God's hand in all of these events. Ask, what is God up to in this moment right now? And I believe we can answer. God is up to reconciliation. That's what God's up to. Ask what God is up to in this present moment, and I believe we can say God is up to making peace, creating shalom on earth as it is in heaven. Ask what God is up to in this present moment right now. I believe we can say, without qualification, God is up to healing. I believe that with all of my heart. But ask what God is up to at this present moment, and we must also add, in God's time. And sometimes God's time is slow and patient and deliberate and authentic, always authentic, and always true. I think we can say it this way. God is always operating by love, sometimes secretly, quietly, and slowly, but always by love. Right behind me, you will notice that there is a change that has taken place in our sanctuary. Through these these weeks of this series called Run the New Program, we've had decorations of the old program that have been stacked up all over the back space over here in front of the cross. We've had old computers, you'll remember, and old hard drives, and there were CDs hanging all over the place, and some printers, and all kinds of stuff. It looked an awful lot like my garage, come to think of it. It was stacked all the way up over the top here so that it constantly obscured the cross, and there was a reason for that. You see, the old programs that we run that are constantly working at the pace of the quick fix and constantly looking for efficiency have tremendous power to cover the vision of the cross for us. I hope that you never tire of me saying this. I especially hope that because I'm going to keep saying it. That whenever Christian people ask the question, where do we see God most clearly at work? At what point in all of history do we see God most clearly revealed? We Christians always answer the cross of Jesus Christ. Notice, it's not the sword of Rome. It's not the bazooka of the dictator. God is most clearly made known in the cross of Jesus Christ. And friends, what that means is God is operating all the time at the speed of love. And the speed of love is not the same as the speeds of our efficiencies. What is God up to today? God is healing. God is setting things right. God is causing his kingdom to break out on earth as it is in heaven. God is calling people to himself. God is forgiving people and giving new starts. God is setting people on the way and turning them in a different direction. God is healing. God is healing. And the healing is taking place at the speed of love. I believe that we need to run a new program. I believe that we desperately need to run a new program today. I think we're running old programs that are working at the speed of light, and they're not helping us. Programs that have us at one another's throats. Programs that have us reaching out for what gives happiness, only trying to grasp it in the fastest ways. And then as we do so, we become more and more addicted to those things that we grasp. I believe that today we desperately, desperately need to run a new program, and the center of the new program is the love of God that is poured out in Jesus Christ. And folks, I just got to say, although God can do whatever God wants, most of the time, God takes decades to create saints, not days or weeks or months. Most of the time, God takes decades. God takes decades with people who set aside space in their lives and they create space for prayer on a regular basis. Listen, you'll make it through the day without praying. You'll make it through the day without creating space for quietness. There are 1,000 things that are more urgent. But over time, God is forming saints who are learning to walk with him day by day by day by day. You'll make it through the day without forming community, without putting energy into relationships. You'll make it through the day without meeting other people who are on the journey of following Jesus. You'll make it through the day without other people who are walking in the direction toward transformation. You make it through the day, but decades from now, the question is, will you be a different person than you are today? And you'll make it through the day if you don't join yourself in service to the world the way Jesus taught us, you will. You can walk through the day and you can see 1,000 things going on and you can do all of them and you cannot give yourself in service to others in Jesus' name. But a decade from now, the question is, will you be a different person than you are today? God makes saints over months and years and decades. At least, I believe that's the norm. When we were in Arizona this last summer, when Dawn and Reese and I were traveling through the country, we came back through Arizona, and we stopped and visited some friends that some of you know by the name of Joel and Elizabeth Harper. Joel and Elizabeth and their beautiful children, Josiah and Aaliyah, live in Window Rock, Arizona. Window Rock is home of the Navajo Reservation, right on the border of New Mexico and Arizona, and we were privileged to spend a couple of days with Joel and Elizabeth. Here's what I learned. The Navajo Reservation is, like many, many reservations in our country, a place where there's tremendous poverty and tremendous need. The dropout rate from the schools is extraordinary. Addiction rates are much, much higher than they are through the nation as a whole. It is a place of incredible need. And here's what I also learned. Joel Harper is the third generation of Harpers who have lived in Window Rock to bear witness to the love of God in Jesus Christ in that community. The third generation. His father founded a mission, his grandfather founded a mission church in Window Rock. His father worked in the mission for throughout his adult years. And now Joel and Liz are living there in this setting, in this community, living out as the third generation of people who have lived there and worked among them. We went to the place where Liz works. She works at this, I would describe it as kind of the his place of Window Rock. Only the thing that primary thing that they do at his place of Window Rock is they do after-school mentoring with students. Remember, these are kids whose dropout rate from the schools is just extraordinary. So here's Liz and here's her staff that every day after school are meeting with students. They're setting up appointments and meeting with students. And by the way, operating by tough love. They tell a student, first time you set up an appointment, we'll meet with you. But if you miss it, we'll set up a second appointment. But if you miss that one and set up a third, that's your last chance. It's tough love that they're working out with these students on the reservation. And some of the fruit of that is beginning to come back. Students who are staying in school and students who are making a difference and students who are growing. And then there's Joel. Joel is a high school teacher. They live about two blocks away from the high school. Joel is a high school teacher working with these students. Bear in mind, he's third generation. He's working with these students, and one of the things that he's done is he's planted a garden. These are kids that have never had an opportunity to have a garden, so he's created this beautiful raised bed garden, and he's got these gravity-operated water systems that run hoses down to the garden, and he brings students in to till the soil and to plant the seeds and then to pull the weeds, and they grow up together. And I asked him, are students actually coming and helping? And he says, oh, yes, they're loving it. Students are coming before and after school to help to grow this garden. And you may be wondering, why in the world am I telling you all of this story? By the way, one more thing. Let me tell you one more thing. Joel also told me that one day a year he goes into his classes and he says, I want to offer you an apology. Then he says, my apology, this white person standing among Navajo students is, my apology is, I'm sorry that we've made it possible for you to not need to work. Because the truth is that working is part of being alive and it's having dignity. And it's growing. And so I want to do everything in my power to help those of you who are here to learn how to work. It's an incredible story. And if you're wondering why I'm telling you this story, the secret is three generations. Joel Harper is the third generation of Harpers that have lived in this place and earned the right to be heard. You see, I believe that the new program is operating at the speed of love. I believe that we need to replace an order system in our world that puts efficiency above love. And I believe we need to flip that and we need to say, love is more important than efficiency. In fact, efficiency should always be the servant of love. And I believe that we can. We can run a new program. Every day, you have the opportunity to do this. You have the opportunity every day to create space, to be quiet, to let your soul learn to commune with God, your Creator. Every day you have that opportunity. Every day you have the opportunity to connect in community with other people who are on this journey together, because that's what it is to be church, isn't it? To be on a journey together. And I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the opportunities to do that in just a moment. And every day we have the opportunity to join ourselves in service in this community in the name of Jesus Christ. Now I want to close this series of messages with a very beautiful word, one of my favorite words. The word is consecration. It's a slow word. It's got so many syllables you can't say it quickly. Consecration. Powerful, powerful word. Consecration simply means devoted to God. That's its meaning. And this morning, I want to invite and challenge you once again to consecration. Consecration means simply, I'm devoting my life to God and the new program that God would have me run, to be a different person a month from now, 2 months from now, 5 months from now, 5 years from now,
than the one I am today. Consecration doesn't mean that you won't slip, fall, or stumble. Consecration means that from this day forward, you're devoted to the work of God in our world and in our lives, which is always the work of love. This morning, I want to invite you to respond with consecration, however it is that you need to. If you want to kneel at one of our altars, I want to encourage you to do that. There are three of them, one up here in the front on this side, and there are two up here. If you need to go write down your prayer of consecration on one of the and put it in one of the little prayer boxes over here in the wings, you can do that. However it is that you need to do it now, maybe it's just by raising your hand as the students lead us this morning. But however it is that you need to do it, I invite you at this time to renew your consecration so that you may be a different person 5 years from today than the one that you are today. Will you do that with me, church? Let's stand together and let's worship as our students come and lead us in this closing song.